Hello. If everyone can hear me, then wave in classy uni while we're waiting to get started. We've got about 5 minutes. Okay, good. So I'm coming through fine. That's nice. And the class will be kind of difficult for you guys. Okay, it's practically 3 o'clock, so I'm gonna start up with the class. So welcome everyone to Fitting 101. My name is Keggs. I have been playing Eve since early January. Most of that time's been in the uni, playing around with various types of fits, so PvE, PvP, mining, wormholes, oh, that kind of stuff. So, been sort of like fiddling with fits for quite a while. And what this class is, it's not a class that's going to tell you that for a rifter, you need to fit this module, this module, this module, and this module for a rifter fit to be any good. It's more about teaching you how to think about fitting your ships. How to get the best out of your ships for your current skills, not give it not dictating what fits you should be using. So it's more about starting to think about how you fit a ship rather than actually telling you what modules to fit, etc. So hopefully everyone will find it useful, and we'll start off with the first principles, basically. Hopefully you guys are somewhere where you're not going to be too worried about being distracted by the class. So if you could open your fitting window, that is the fourth button down on the neocon, just underneath the mail client, and you should already know where that is, hopefully, if you've been fitting any ships at all. Right. In the fitting window, you've got your big donut right in the middle, which has got a picture of your ship that you're currently sitting in. Around it, you've got your various modules that you're actually fit to the ship. And there are areas for the high slots, areas for the mid slots, areas for the low slots, and the upgrade slots where you can fit rigs. So that's all pretty easy, pretty self-explanatory. There are some numbers around this donut that are kind of important for when you're fitting a ship, though. So if you look just to below and to the right of the donut, you will see two figures. CPU, which has got two numbers divided by a slash, and power grid, which has also got two numbers divided by a slash. Now, these are very important for fitting. Every module that you're going to be fitting to a ship has a set amount of CPU that it requires to be activated and effective, and a set amount of power grid that it needs. And if you don't have a sufficient power grid to when you try and fit a module, you won't be able to turn it on. This doesn't matter whether it's an active module or a passive module, it won't be able to be online. So it will just take up a slot and not do anything. So you have full CPU. Those two figures, the one in front of the slot is the amount of CPU you are currently using on your ship. The amount after the slash is the amount of CPU you've got available in total. The ship I happen to be sitting in is an Incursus frigate, so standard T1 combat frigate, quite commonly used, usually by Galente pilots. And at the moment I've got 137.5 CPU available, and I'm using 136.25 of it. So the modules I've got fit on that ship is kind of a tight fit. Below that, you've got power grid. And again, it's got two numbers. The first number is the amount of power grid you're currently using. The second number is the amount of power grid you've got available to use. And again, in the ship I'm sitting in at the moment, I've got 42.5 power grid available, and I'm using 41.95. So, again, not a great deal of room. So, those figures, they dictate what modules you can actually fit on your ship. If you've run out of power grid or you've run out of CPU, then and you've still got slots left over, there are very few modules you can put onto a ship that will work with no power grid and no CPU. The next figure that is kind of important, if you've got the information window that open to the right of the fitting donut, and hopefully you have because it gives you a variety of very useful information. At the top of this box of information, you've got running that right down the right hand side, you've got box school capacitor, and that shows as a donut type thing. And if you've got a stable capacitor, then it will be lit depending on how much how cap stable you are. Maybe half, maybe three quarters. If it's completely unfit, you'll have the entire of that donut will be green. And sorry, orange. And if you are cap stable, at the bottom of that little window, you will see in green letters the word stable. That means that you can run every single module on your ship all the time, and you will never run out of power. If you're not cap stable, you will get the information depletes in with a figure for how long you can run every single module on your ship. Now, the chances that you're going to be running every single active module on your ship are that kind of small, but it's useful information to be able to see. There are some external tools that provide better information and allow you to see how much cap you've got with various combinations of your modules turned on and off, but those are slightly outside the scope of this class because they're just a huge topic. I will cover them briefly. The third figure that is important in the fitting window, if you look in the top left, you have a figure calibration. Again, this has got a number in front of the slash, a number behind the slash, where the number behind the slash will be 400, because every T1 ship has got 400 calibration. And what calibration does is it's the figure required for fitting rigs. Rigs are kind of semi-permanent upgrades to a ship. You can fit one, but if you take a rig out of your ship, it destroys the rig. So they're useful, but you need to think about what rigs you want to fit on a ship, because if you make a mistake and want to replace a rig, you're destroying that rig. So that can be kind of expensive. And all rigs have got about a calibration value, the amount of calibration they need, and all T1 ships start with 400 calibration, and there is no way to increase the amount of calibration through skills. The calibration is a hard figure. It can't be increased through skills, through module, through implants. Okay, so hopefully everyone's clear on that. Your other figures, so your power grid, your CPU, and your capacitor, can all be increased by training various skills. The most important skills for power grid and CPU are engineering and electronics. Engineering increases the amount of power grid you have available in your ship by 5% per level. So When you've got engineering at level 4, you've got another 20% power grid available. When you've got engineering at level 5, you've got another 25% power grid available. Electronics, it's the same thing. It increases the CPU by 5% per level. These two skills are very, very useful to have at level 5. They're worth trying to get to level 5 as soon as you can, because it just makes fitting a ship a lot easier. As you can imagine, especially in the smaller ships, that 25% extra power grid and 25% extra CPU makes a lot of things a lot easier to fit. Those are your two core power grid fitting skills. You've also got a variety of the upgrade skills. Weapon upgrades, for example. For each level of weapon upgrades, you reduce the amount of CPU required for any weapon system fitted to the ship by 2%. It doesn't sound like much, but this does actually add up. It's level 5, which, again, weapon upgrades is very, very useful to have at level 5. That's 10% less CPU for every single gun system, missile bay, smart bomb that you fit onto your ship. So, very, very useful. Advanced weapons upgrades. Oh, I was wrong. It's 5% to reduction of the CPU. Yep, getting it. That's a bit embarrassing, but never mind. When you get weapon upgrades to level 5, you unlock the skill Advanced Weapon Upgrades. Advanced Weapon Upgrades is 2% reduction to the power grid need of every weapon system that you fit on your ship. So, weapon upgrades to 5, 25 less CPU need. Advanced Weapon Upgrades, which you can only start training once you've got weapon upgrades to 5, you can get Advanced Weapon Upgrades to 4, which is a bit of a slog, is 8% less power grid. A lot more useful than you'd think. Advanced Weapons Upgrades to 5 is useful, but I'm not going to recommend you put that in your plan, in your skill plan really early, because it takes 20-something days to get Advanced Weapon Upgrades to 5. So it's a long skill. I recommend training it only when you start to need it, which would be if you want to start flying Recons, which are a Tech 2 cruiser, or if you want to train Marauders. Having Advanced Weapon Upgrades to 5 is a prerequisite for training the Marauders, which is a variety of T2 battleship. But Weapon Upgrades, Advanced Weapons Upgrades to 5, very useful skills. Advanced Weapon Upgrades, train it as high as you need it at any given point. If you've got a lot of skills and you're not really worried about about training a really long skill that like Advanced Weapon Upgrades is, then having Advanced Weapon Upgrades 5 is lovely, but I still haven't got it to 5. I might get it to 5 within the next 6 months, I don't know. Shield upgrades for you shield tankers, which is people like Minmatar, Kaldari. Shield upgrades, very useful, reduces the power grid, I believe, not really shield tanker here, reduces the power grid need of your shield modules. So, I was right, cool. Reduces the power grid need of your shield modules by 5%, so that's shield extenders, that's shield boosters, that's invulnerability fields. Again, very, very useful, especially if you're a major shield tanker. So, Kaldari players, this is a really good skill to train quite high. Minmatar pilots or people who are cross-training into Minmatar, again, really, really useful skill, because it just... because it just makes it easier to fit stuff. It reduces the amount of power grid on any shield module. So, Ratomir John, does shield upgrades affect shield extenders? Yes, it does. If you've got shield upgrades to full, then for every shield extender you try and fit, you're requiring 20% less power grid. Every invulnerability field you're trying to fit, you're requiring 20% less power grid. So this can make a big difference for actually fitting your ships if you're shield tanking. There are some other skills which can be useful. Energy grid upgrades, electronics upgrades. Again, these are skills that will reduce CPU or power grid requirements to certain modules. But those five skills I've talked about there, they are the core fitting skills. So, yep, and electronics upgrades, Waylon. Those five, so electronics, engineering, weapon upgrades, advanced weapon upgrades, shield upgrades, those are probably the most important of the fitting skills. The other fitting skills tend to affect fewer modules, maybe modules that you'll only have one or two fitted, if at all. So training those skills up high for purely fitting purposes is possibly less vital, although those skills do actually unlock certain modules which are very useful, especially energy grid upgrades, I believe, unlocks certain modules. Electronics upgrades unlocks the CoVOPS ships, which is nice, and that's the main reason why a lot of people train electronics upgrades to five, so they can start flying the stealth bombers and the CoVOPS ships and the other cloakers. Now, let's imagine that you're thinking about getting a new ship. You're not entirely sure what you're going to be using it for yet. You're not entirely sure how you'd want to fit it. So, the first thing you do when you're thinking about buying a ship is you think, what do I want to use the ship for? So, is it going to be one of my missioning ships? Am I going to be using it for PvE? Am I going to be using it for wormholes? Or am I going to be using it for PvP? Because these decisions make a difference on how you fit your ship. A good ship fittings, it's all about specialization. A multi-role ship, if you tried to fit a ship that was decent for PvE and PvP, it's not going to be terribly good at either. You want to specialize. So, the first thing you do when you're thinking about buying a ship is you go look at the show info on the ship. I've got three examples that I'd like to get linked in. The Thorax, the Drake, and the Myrmidon. And I'll just wait a sec while Waylon links those in. Okay, brilliant. I've got the show info for the Drake open. However, if you hold shift down while you click on the show info windows, you can open multiple show info windows in your client, so you can look at the Thorax, you can look at the Drake, you can look at the Myrmidon all at the same time. Okay, we'll start with the Drake though. If you go and look at the description tab in the show info window, you will see there's a bit of blurb about the Drake and a bit of background about it. And then below that, you've got a section called Battle Cruiser Skill Bonus. This is what you're wanting to look at. For each level of the Battle Cruiser skill, you get 5% shield resistances, and you get 5% bonus to kinetic damage for heavy missiles and heavy assault missiles. So, at level 4, which is a good level to have the Battle Cruiser skill at, general rule of thumb, if a skill's worth having, it's worth having to at least level 4. Train it to level 5 if you then want to go on to fly the T2 variants of that ship class. So for battle cruisers, that's command ships, but level 4 is kind of the best bang for the buck if you don't need level 5. And at level 4, you get 20% extra shield resistances on a Drake, which is a really, really nice bonus. And you get 20% extra damage for kinetic damage types using heavy missiles and heavy assault missiles. There's also a roll bonus for the battlecruiser roll, which is a 99% reduction in the CPU need for warfare link modules. Now, these are modules that provide bonuses to fleet mates if you're flying in a PvP fleet or even a PvE fleet, but they're kind of an advanced module, so I won't really be covering them. But yeah, so looking at the main bonuses for a Drake, you're thinking it gets bonuses to its shield tank, and it's got bonuses to kinetic damage for missile systems. So you're thinking shield tank it, use missile systems. Unsurprisingly, because this is a Kaldari battlecruiser, and Kaldari's primary weapon systems is usually missile systems, and Kaldari almost exclusively shield tank. So that's what the bonuses from the Drake are telling you. If we then go and look at the Thorax, which is a Galente cruiser, you will see, again, a bit of background about blah, blah, blah. And below that, you will see the Galente cruiser skill bonus. Now, for each level of the Galente cruiser skill, you get 5% bonus to the damage done by medium hybrid turrets. And you get a 5% increase in the micro warp drive capacitor bonus per level. Now, that's telling you that you want to fit medium hybrid turrets on Thorax, which is not terribly surprising because for Galente, their primary weapon system that they're going to be using is going to be hybrid turrets, so blasters or railguns. And at Galente Cruiser level 4, you're getting 20% extra damage from any medium hybrid turret system. The micro warp drive bonus is telling you that in situations where a micro warp drive is useful, so largely PvP, the Thorax works quite well with a micro warp drive. That bonus is actually a little bit complicated in that micro warp drives, as soon as you fit them, they've got a capacitor penalty. It's called capacitor bonus because CCP are terrible at naming their own bonuses. But it's actually a capacitor penalty. If you fit a standard Meta-Zero 10 meganewton micro warp drive one onto a Thorax, you will lose 25% of the capacitor available, so it actually reduces the size of the capacitor. If you've got Galente Cruiser trained to level 1, which you will have if you're trying to fly... If you've got Galente Cruiser trained to level 3 even, which is the minimum needed to get it sit in a Thorax, that penalty, so that reduction in the size of the capacitor, is reduced to 10%, because you've got 25% capacitor penalty from fitting the micro warp drive, but for each level of Galente Cruiser on a Thorax, that penalty is reduced by 5%. So at 3, which is the minimum to sit in a Thorax, you've reduced the penalty by 15%, so you've got 10% less capacitor. A little weird thing that comes in is if you fit the meta level, named cruiser size micro warp drive, which is the YT8B micro warp drive, overcharged hydrocarbon micro warp drive, which I've just linked in, you will see that the capacitor penalty on that micro warp drive is 19%, minus 19%. So if your maths are up to speed, what happens if you've got Galente Cruiser trained to 4 and you fit a YT8 overcharged hydrocarbon micro warp drive to a thorax? If anyone's got any idea, type it into chat, into the class channel. Yep, that's correct, L'Oreal. If you fit a YT8 micro warp drive to a thorax and you've got Galente Cruiser trained to level 4, it actually increases the size of your cab. If you've got Galente Cruiser trained to level 5, it gives you 6% extra cap. This is really weird, and almost certainly CCP didn't mean it to happen. So, yay for CCP. But anyway, so looking at the bonuses on the thorax, it's telling you that micro warp drives fit well, and you want to be fitting. And you want to be fitting median hybrid turrets. So that's immediately what you're starting to think about in your fitting if you're playing around with the thorax. Now my third example is the Myrmidon. And the Myrmidon is a Galente battlecruiser. Now, after we ignore all the backgroundy stuff, you've got the battlecruiser skill bonus, which is 10% increase in drone hit points and damage dealt by drones per level of battlecruiser, and a 7.5% increase in the armor repair amount. So what that gives you, it gives you 40% extra drone hit points, 40% extra damage with drones using a Myrmidon. This is kind of telling you you want to be using drones as your primary weapon system. With a Myrmidon. It's a classic Galente drone mode. And it also gives you, at level 4 of Battlecruiser, 30% extra armor hit points repaired per cycle of your armor repairers. So that's telling you that that the Myrmidon actually works very nicely with an active armor tank. Again, so things you're thinking about with Myrmidon that the bonuses are telling you are drones are the way to go for DPS with the Myrmidon, and that it works well with an active armor tank. However, the Myrmidon is a good example of one of the ships where those ship bonuses don't quite give you the whole story, especially on the armor tank. An active armor tank isn't always appropriate. For example, in PvP, active armor tanks tend to get overwhelmed by the amount of DPS that you get in PvP, so usually buffer fits are more effective. And also, as a battlecruiser, the Myrmidon has a very good shield recharge rate. All of the battlecruisers have good shield recharge times. So, in combination with the slot layout, which I'll be talking about in a second, the Myrmidon actually also shields tanks very well. So, sometimes there are a few ships that will do shield tanks well and armor tanks well, and the bonuses don't necessarily tell you exactly where the strengths of the ship lie, although they are usually a very good indicator. So we've talked about the ship bonuses that you're going to be looking at when you're thinking about getting a ship, thinking about how you want to fit it. The next thing you look at is you look at the fitting tab. What the fitting tab does is it gives you an idea of what resources you've got available for fitting your ships. So it tells you the CPU, tells you the power grid, calibration, and it also tells you the number of low slots, mid slots, and high slots, and how many turret hardpoints and launcher hardpoints you've got for fitting your weapon systems. So if we go back to the Drake, the Drake. It's got decent CPU, decent power grid, etc. It's got 4 low slots, 6 medium slots, and 8 high slots. Of those 8 high slots, 7 of them are launcher hardpoints, and it doesn't have a single turret hardpoint. So looking at the slot layout and hardpoints on a Drake tells you that you're only going to be able to fit missile launchers. You're not going to be able to fit turrets, even if you wanted to. So there's no such thing as the LOL-fit laser Drake or rail Drake. It's always got to be missile launchers. And the next thing you're looking at is you're thinking about what tank you want to fit. As a general rule of thumb, if a ship's got more medium slots than low slots, you're probably thinking about fitting a shields tank, because the majority of the shield tank modules fit in the mid slots of a ship. If you've got more low slots than mid slots, you're probably thinking about an armor tank, because every single armor tank module is a low slot module. So, Drake, 6 mid slots, 4 low slots. Again, with the shield resistance bonuses, this is an obvious shield tanking ship. And this shouldn't be a surprise, it's Kaldari. And it's also famous for having a very hefty shield tank, but we'll go over that later. If we switch again to the Thorax and look at the fitting tab on the Thorax, you will see that the Thorax has 5 low slots, 3 mid slots, and 5 high slots. Of those 5 high slots, all 5 are turret hardpoints. So, you already know from the ship bonuses that you want to be fitting medium hybrid weapons, so medium blasters or medium railguns. And with the high slots and the number of turret hardpoints, you want to be fitting 5 of them. So, you want to be filling up your turret hardpoints with guns. And the Thorax, it's got 5 low slots and 3 medium slots, so immediately you're thinking, this is probably an armor tank ship, and yep, 90% of the time the Thorax is armor tanked, because it's got more low slots. It needs the mid slots for other things, propulsion modules, tackle, things like that. So the mid slots get used for that. The low slots are used for armor tank, among other things. So that's your Thorax. You know that you want medium hybrids from the bonus. You want to fill the turret hardpoints with them, because every single high slot can have gun fitted on the Thorax. And because it's got more low slots than medium slots, you pretty much want to be fitting an armor tank. So fairly simple on that particular example. Now, if we go back to the Myrmidon, and the Myrmidon is the awkward example I picked from these initial 3 examples. The Myrmidon's got 6 low slots, it's got 5 mid slots, it's got 6 high slots. Those 6 high slots, they're all turret hardpoints. However, as the Myrmidon's unbonused on turret weapon systems, and it's got good bonuses for drones, you're probably wanting to give up one of those turret hardpoints at least for a drone link augmenter, which is a type of drone module that increases the range of your drones. And as it's got no bonus on any particular weapon system, you can fit whatever weapon system you like. A lot of people tend to fit projectile weapons onto a Myrmidon, because projectile weapons don't use any capacitor when they fire, unlike hybrid guns or lasers, fitting projectiles onto a Myrmidon gives you more capacitor to play with your, say, if you're active armor tanking or you're using various active modules. And the Myrmidon, it's got 1 more low slot than medium slot, but it's got a good number of medium slots, it's got a good number of low slots. And the Myrmidon tanks very well armor tanked, but it also tanks very well shield tanked. Possibly, again, unintended consequences of some of CCP's design decisions, but the Myrmidon, it's one of a fairly small number of ships in the game that will armor tank and shield tank equally well, and it's all down to how you want to fit one. And I'll be talking about that a bit later on. So those are the things that you're looking at initially with your fittings. So we'll just move on to my, I call them golden rules. These are all things that you'll hear in chatty uni, in general Eve discussions if people are talking about fitting. So in the rookie chat, in eUni Public, you've all probably seen people say these things. First one, don't mix guns. I'm sure every single one of you's heard someone say, don't mix guns. Usually when someone's fitted, when someone's linked to fitting that they want comments on, and they're quite new to the game. So there's some reasons why you don't want to mix guns. The first one is you are mixing your optimals. If, especially if you are using different size weapons, so you're using artillery for some of the gun slots and autocannons for some of the other gun slots, what you've got there is you will have some of your weapons will be long range, but poor tracking. So they'll be able to hit stuff quite a way away. But some of your other weapons are quite a bit shorter range, and they've got better tracking. So when the targets you're wanting to shoot at are a long way away, you're not able to use all of your weapon systems because some of them are out of range. When the targets are in range of all of your weapon systems, because the artillery have got comparatively rubbish tracking compared to autocannon, they might be in range, but because of tracking issues, you're unlikely to be able to hit with the artillery, whereas the autocannon will be hitting quite well. So what mixing your guns does is it reduces your DPS that's available at any given range. Now, for any ship you want to be flying, you want to be putting out your damage at one range. So you want to be fitted with all of the same size and caliber of weapons. So you want to be using, say, six 45mm autocannons if you're flying a Hurricane, which has got six turret hardpoints. I'm just picking that as an example, rather than, say, three 45mm autocannons and three of the medium howitzers. You want to be all of the same caliber of gun, all of the same, ideally all of the same meta level of the gun, because even having different meta levels, so the named modules, it does affect the range slightly, although it's not quite as big a thing as different calibers, different types, different sizes of weapons. But you want to be doing all of your DPS at one range, and you want to be brilliant at that range, killing stuff quickly at that range, rather than some of your weapons work well 15 kilometers out, some of them work well at 2 kilometers out. It's going to cause you difficulties. It just makes things less efficient, and yeah, it doesn't work too well. The next rule is pretty much for the same reasons. Don't mix your tanks. So don't have a ship which has got both a shield tank and an armor tank, because you want to be great at one rather than okay at both. If you're great at one tank, you'll survive longer than if you've just got okay tanks, but you're running two tanks. It just make again specialization. Being great at one thing is a lot better than being mediocre at two things. So that's your don't mix tanks. And third one is, again, a phrase you'll hear quite a lot in various channels, real men hold tank. This tends to be very silly. Reasons it's very silly. One, there is no safety margin if you're hold tanking. So if you're a shield tanker, if you lose all your shields, you've got armor to soak up a bit of damage while you frantically try and get your ship out of there. So that's your there. That's your safety margin. If you've lost all your shields and you're starting to go into armor, you really want to be getting there. You really wanted to be trying to get out of there before you lost all your shields, but you've still got that little bit of a buffer. If you're armor tanking, you've got your hull, you've got the structure as that tiny little buffer available to you that you can use while you frantically try and get your ship out of there. If you're hull tanking, if you're structure tanking, you lose your structure, you're sat in a pod. That's kind of expensive. It's kind of embarrassing, possibly. And yeah, your pod basically becomes your safety margin, when that's really not terribly good. Also, the active hull repairers have got horrible cycle times and they don't repair much hull. So an active hull tank is rubbish. Of course, like a lot of golden rules in anything, these don't always apply. There are times when you might want to mix your guns. There are times where you might want to have a double tank, where you might want to have a shield tank and armor tank ship. And yes, there are times when you want to be hull tanking. But the real point to take from this, especially when you're fitting a ship, is know these rules. Know why people say don't mix guns, don't mix tanks, don't hull tank. And if you're going to break the rule, understand why you're breaking the rule and make sure it's for a damn good reason. There are good reasons for hull tanking. The Orca, for example, if you hull tank an Orca, it can get disgusting amounts of DPS. Waylon asks, presumably the same for mixing ammo. If you've not got mixed guns, you almost certainly don't be grouping your guns, because otherwise it's a complete pain in to try and turn all your guns on individually, especially if you've got a ship that's got quite a few guns or quite a few missile systems. So they're all going to have the same ammunition. And yeah, you want to be using the same ammunition, because the ammunition dictates partly the optimal range of your weapon systems. So you want to be doing your damage at one range. And if you need to swap ammo because the enemy's coming closer and you've got ammo that does more DPS but has got shorter range, then do that. But usually you want to be keeping the same optimals. So for certain weapon systems, hybrids, lasers, you choose your ammo on the basis of the range that you're engaging. And when the range changes, you change up your ammunition. You don't have your mixed ammunition. So you don't have a ship which has got antimatter loaded in some of the guns and iridium in some of the other guns. You want everything with antimatter or everything with iridium, so all of your guns are working all of the time. Now, just started finished talking about the golden rules, so now we'll talk about modules and meta levels. And this can be confusing for people, especially early on, when people start talking in chat about things like Meta 0 and Meta 4 and Meta 2 and Meta 3 modules. I will just answer MD's question. MD asks, what about projectile weapons where you'd fit, say, two guns with electromagnetic ammo, two guns with explosive ammo to counter shields or armor, respectively? I'd pick one. I'd either pick phase plasma or I'd pick EMP, and I'd use it. I'd have the other one in my cargo bay, but I would just use one and swap out as needed. Obviously, for missions, you'd use the ammo type in projectiles that the NPC rats are weakest to. But for PvP, I'd pick one, have the other one available in my cargo bay to load up if I needed to, and hopefully you'd be getting intelligence before you go into an engagement of whether the targets are using mainly shield tank ships or mainly armor tank ships. So if you've got that intelligence, you'd pick the preferable damage type. So if you're coming up against the Drake gang, you're going to pick EMP because they're shield tanked. If you come up against an armor hat gang, you probably want phase plasma because they're going to be armor tanked. But I wouldn't mix my ammunition across the guns I've got loaded. I'd just have everything loaded with a single type of ammunition. Okay, back to modules. Right, meta levels. If you look at a standard module, so the base, normal, cheapest module that you get on the market for something, so I will find. So I will just link him a damage control one, because I happen to have one in my hangar for some reason. Damage control one is your basic. It's the worst type of damage control you can buy. It's also the cheapest. It's the basic damage control that you can fit on your ship when you've got the skill to fit damage controls. And that module is what is known as the Meta Zero version of the module. It's the base Tech 1 version. It requires fewer skills to use. The Damage Control 1 requires Mechanic Level 1 and Hull Upgrades Level 1, which you can fit a Damage Control 1 fairly early on in the game. It's pretty easy to get the skills to fit one. If you look at the Variations tab, you will see under the Tech 1 section of the Variations a variety of named versions of these modules. So you've got the Emergency Damage Control, you've got the Internal Force Field Array. And if you click on the little blue eye on the Internal Force Field Array and go back to the Attributes tab, if you scroll down all the way to the bottom of the Attributes tab, you will see a value called meta level, and it's got the value meta level 4. This means that the Internal Force Field Array is the best available named module in the Tech 1 damage controls. It's also horrendously expensive because it's actually very good. What the Internal Force Field Array, the advantages it has over the Damage Control 1 is, if you look at the fitting requirements, it only requires 17 teraflops of CPU. It requires 1 megawatt of power grid, same as the standard Tech 1 Meta Zero Damage Control, whereas the Meta Zero Damage Control requires 25 teraflops of CPU. So the Meta 4 version is a lot easier to fit. And this is fairly standard. When you're going into the named versions, you will find that the named version is always easier to fit than the standard MetaZero. Well, except for the few modules that don't have any CPU and power grid requirements, where every version of the module is as easy to fit as every other one. But the advantages of the named versions of modules are they're easier to fit. They require exactly the same skills as the base MetaZero damage control, so the base MetaZero version of a module. And they've got better statistics. The Meta4 version of a module is often comparable in effectiveness to the Tech2 version of a module. Sometimes it can be a little bit less effective than the Tech2 version. Sometimes it's actually better than the Tech2 version. That knowing that kind of you need to kind of compare stats in the variations tab, and you it's a little bit of experience. Almost always, especially the high meta versions, so the Meta3s, the Meta4s, are more expensive than Tech2. For example, the internal force field array, if I quickly look up the HEC price, yep, the internal force field array is 15 million. And yep, as Wayland Scorg says, you can use the compare tool at the bottom of the variations tab to compare various statistics of the module. So talking about the internal force field array, the Meta4 damage control, that's 15 million ISK. That's a cheap, just under. That's the cheapest you can find it in the Metropolis region. That's a lot of money, especially considering that the Tech2 version of the damage control is all of 600,000. So you're paying a lot of money for the Meta4 module. The Meta4 module is, in this particular instance, slightly less effective than the Tech2 damage control. The advantage is it's got a lot lighter fitting requirements, and you don't require the same skills as you do for the Tech2. So you're paying a lot of money to get a module that's easier to fit and doesn't require the skill investment. So sometimes that can be worth it on some Meta4 modules, sometimes it's not. Tech2, which you'll see a lot of people talking about, and I've just linked the Tech2 damage control into the chat, is basically advanced technology versions of the modules. So most Tech1 modules, although not all, there's a very small number of Tech1 modules that don't have a Tech2 equivalent, but most Tech1 modules have a Tech2 equivalent. The Tech2 equivalent has got higher skill requirements. For example, the Tech2 damage control, the damage control 2, requires hull upgrades to be trained to 4. Sorry about that. Yeah, the damage control 2 requires hull upgrades to 4. That's significantly higher skill than you require for the damage control 1 or any of the meta named versions of the modules. Also, the fitting requirements of Tech2 modules are usually at least as high as their Meta0 equivalents, and usually higher. In this case, the damage control 2 requires 30 teraflops of CPU and 1 megawatt of power grid, so that is 5 additional teraflops of CPU required to fit it. The power grid requirement is the same. So the advantage of the Meta4 module is that the CPU requirement is nearly halved. This can be very useful on tight fits when you're running out of CPU, and it is one of the reasons why the Meta4 damage control is so expensive, because it's got significantly lower power CPU requirements. Tech 2, usually it's as good as the Metaphor. It's quite often a fraction of the price. Sometimes the Metaphor is slightly better for various reasons. Sometimes the Tech 2 is slightly better for various reasons. It's always harder to fit, though. It always needs more skills. So that's the kind of things you're thinking about when you're deciding, can I fit T2 versions of the modules? Can I fit, or do I need to spend out for Metaphor versions of the modules? An example where the Metaphor version of a module is always better is armor plates. If you are using armor plate, then you always want to be using the Metaphor version of the armor plate. I've just linked the 400mm Metaphor armor plate, which is the 400mm reinforced rolled tungsten plate. The reason why you always want to be using the Metaphor over the Tech 2 is that the Metaphor gives exactly the same hit point boost that the Tech 2 does at first, significantly reduced fitting requirements, and also the Metaphor plate is lighter than the Tech 2 plate, so it doesn't affect your mobility as much. So that's one of the things you want to be thinking about when you're fitting modules. Second thing that's kind of important, kind of confusing for a lot of people, is stacking penalties. What stacking penalties are is, for a lot of modules, if you are fitting more than one of that type of module, or more than one of types of modules that affect the same statistic, then for each module or other effect that affects that statistic. So a good example is the overdrive ejector system and the nanofiber internal structure, which both affect the speed of a ship. For each module that you fit that affects the same statistic, each module you fit will become slightly less effective. And I will just link the page which tells you about those. So there is a wiki page, and I've just linked the link on stacking penalties that we have on the wiki. That gives you the figures for how much of the modules are penalized. As a general rule of thumb, when you're fitting multiple types of modules that affect the same stats, you usually want to stop by the third module. So first, second, third module, that's pretty good. Even the third module, you're still getting nearly 60% of the boost that you get from the first module. The fourth module and on, the amount of stacking penalty that you're getting is really reducing the effectiveness of the module so much, you're probably better off thinking of fitting something else. So there obviously are times when you might want to fit four modules of the same type. They're kind of rare, and you'll know, hopefully with experience, when those times are. But as a general rule, only fit three of a given type of module. So three gyro stabilizers, and if you've got an extra low slot for a gank module, and you're probably better off fitting a tracking enhancer rather than a fourth gyro stabilizer, etc. With the nanofiber internal structures and overdrive injectors, both of those modules affect the speed of a ship. So if you fit an overdrive injector and a nanofiber, the module with the lower bonus to speed, which will be the nanofiber, still gets hit with the stacking penalty for being the second module affecting that stat. We have a page, and I will link that in chat, which goes over some of the maths of fitting of the stacking penalties where it relates to the speed modules. So whether you want to fit two overdrive injectors and one nanofiber, two nanofibers, one overdrive injector, etc. So that's your stacking penalties. It's something to think about. And yeah, general rule of thumb, try not to use more than three of the modules that affect one type of stat. So now, moving swiftly on, we come to tanks. Tanks are what keep your ship alive in any given situation. You've got three basic types of tank that are commonly used. You've got the armor tanks, you've got shield tanks, and you've got signature or speed or nano tanking, which is all pretty much the name for the same kind of for the same thing. And I will go over them in more detail within the types of modules and things you want to be looking at in a second after I've had a quick drink. Okay, so back. We'll start looking at tanks by looking at the armor tank. Now, for armor tanks, you have got two basic types of tank. You've got a buffer tank, and you've got the active armor tank. And I'll go over them in turn. First one is the buffer tank. This is a type of tank that is usually used in PvP rather than PvE. The theory behind the buffer tank is that you are maximizing the amount of hit points that you've got in your armor. So you're making sure you've got as many hit points as possible in your armor layer of defense, and you're also trying to make sure you've got decent resistances in the armor layer of your defense. And it basically gives you a big buffer of hit points to use up when you're getting shot at by other players, because it is, yeah, pretty much almost exclusively used in PvP. Types of modules you are looking at fitting for a buffer tank, you're looking at plate modules. So, for example, the 400mm reinforced rolled tungsten that I linked a little bit earlier. You are looking at energized adaptive nanomembranes, which is a passive armor hardener which affects the across-the-board resistances. You're also looking at the passive resist membranes, and I'll link one of them in as well. And you're looking at damage controls, and you're looking at basically those types of modules you're looking at. So plate, energized adaptive nanomembranes, which are usually referred to in chat as EANMs because they've got a god-awful long name. Damage controls, passive hardeners, the particular passive hardener I actually linked, the reactive membrane, is the one that plugs in the explosive resist hole that most armor tanks have, where if you look at the resistances on ship for the armor, the lowest is usually explosive, and on a ship that doesn't have any resist modules fit, the explosive resist is usually 10%. So those are the type of modules for your buffer tank. The advantages of a buffer tank: you don't have to manage your armor repairers, so it's one less thing to micromanage. And in PvP, when you're usually getting god-awful high DPS from a bunch of people who've all decided to shoot you rather than the guy next to you, having the buffer is better, because usually in PvP, you're getting more DPS than an active armor tank would be able to cope with. You're getting very, very heavy DPS. And disadvantages to a buffer armor tank: it makes you heavy, it makes you less agile. Basically, you're adding an awful lot of weight with those armor plates. The rigs that you tend to use on A buffer armor tank, which are the Trimark rigs, also penalise the speed of your ship. So you're making yourself heavy, you're making yourself less agile, you're not going to be going anywhere terribly fast. Because it's an armor tank, that hit point buffer from all that plate you've added, it doesn't regenerate. So when you've stopped taking DPS, you're not going to slowly get hit points back. You're going to need to get that buffer repaired, usually either by someone with a remote rep armor repair fitted to the ship, or a logistics ship if you happen to be lucky enough to have them in the fleet, or by docking at a station that's got repair facilities. Other than that, there's no way of repairing that buffer, so it's not regenerating. Makes you heavy and kind of sluggish, but it's basically the type of armor tank you need to stand up to the type of DPS you get in PvP. The active armor tank, conversely, uses the active armor repairers, such as the small armor repairer, and it will tend to use active armor hardeners, such as the armor explosive hardener. If someone could link that in chat, I don't have the module handy. What active tanks are made? Yep, thank you, Sentient. What active armor tanks are generally used for is they're used for PvE. They're used for missioning. They'll also get used for going into wormholes and doing sleeper sites. You've got a variety of different types of active armor tank fit, which are usually referred to by the number of repairs they have. So active armor tanks will usually either be single repair fits, dual repair fits, or multi-repair fits. Dual repair fits are very commonly used in level 3 missions on things like Myrmidons and Harbingers, things like that. My missioning dummy is a dual repair dummy, so it uses two large armor repairers to keep its tank up. The advantages of the active armor tank is it doesn't hurt your mobility. You're not adding all that weight that you get when you start adding plates. So you're as agile as you were before you started adding a tank. And also, the armor hit points, because you're using an active armor repairer, it does regenerate. So you're not having to go off and repair when after people have shot at you. The disadvantages with the active armor tank is, firstly, an active armor tank can be overwhelmed by sheer DPS. If you're taking more damage per second than your active armor repairers can actually repair, can cope with, you're going to die fairly quickly. Just because each cycle that your armor repairers repair you take more damage than they've actually repaired. So you actually start losing your armor hit points fairly swiftly. That actually happened to me the other day, which was embarrassing enough. The other disadvantage of an active armor tank is it is cap dependent. If you're using armor repairers, they need cap to run. If you run out of capacity, you've lost your tank. This can be a problem in PvP because people fitting energy neutralizers is somewhat common in PvP. And if they drain your cap and you're using an active armor tank, then you lost your tank, and that's kind of bad. And that's kind of pretty much all I've got to say on the armor tanks. There are classes offered, and there should be recordings in the class library, which go into the armor tanks in a lot more detail. And especially if you're a Galente pilot or an Amar pilot, and you want to hear about the fittings and skills required for armor tanks then I recommend listening to one of those classes or attending one if one is offered in the near future. So the second type of tank, and this is again very commonly used, are shield tanks. And for shield tanks, you've got three different types of tanks. You've got buffer tank, you've got what's called the passive tank, and you've got the active shield tank. And again, I'll go through them briefly, very quickly. The buffer tank is the same theory as the armor buffer tank. You're building up as many hit points as possible in your shield defense layer. So you're using things like large or medium or small shield extenders. You're using invulnerability fields. You might be using the passive hardeners for reducing your EM resist hole, and again you're using damage control, because damage controls provide small boosts to resists across the board, so small boost to shield, small boost to armor, large boost to structure. I'll talk a little bit later about just how awesome damage controls are. But the small shield booster, you wouldn't be using a shield booster for a buffer tank. Shield booster is equivalent to a armor repairer, so that's more for the active tank. But yeah, shield extenders, invulnerability fields, the passive hardeners. Yep, no worries. Passive hardeners, things like that. What it does, it maximizes your shield hit points. It's better for facing high DPS applied fast, so brilliant for PvP. The disadvantage is that it increases the signature radius of the ship, so it makes it faster and easier to lock, slightly easier to hit for turret weapon systems, but missiles will tend to do more damage, especially the larger sized missiles like cruise missiles, because part of the calculations for missile damage is based on the sig radius of the ship. Also because you're maximizing the buffer rather than maximizing the regeneration rate, the shield regen is slower. However, it's a shield tank, so it does regenerate slowly over time. So even if you've taken damage in your shields in a PvP engagement, you will slowly regain it. So that's kind of your buffer tank for shield tanks. Your passive tank, it's kind of similar to a buffer tank. You're going to be using shield extenders and hardeners and vulnerability fields in the same way that you will with a buffer tank. But in addition to that, you're going to be using things like shield capacitor relays, where you're swapping capacitor size and regen rate for your shield regen rate. What the theory behind the passive tank is that you maximize the regeneration rate of your shields. So you've not got the same absolute hit points that you'll have with a shield buffer tank, but because you've got fast shield regeneration, it's actually coping very well with incoming DPS. And the shield and passive shield tanks are often used in PvE. They are somewhat used in PvP. The shield flux core is one of those modules. It's a low slot module that swaps your recharge rate of for shield capacity. But the shield power relay is the better module. You probably want to avoid using shield flux coils in a passive tank too much, because it's reducing the hit points you've got in shield slightly for your regen rate, whereas the shield power relay swaps capacitor regen rate for shield regen rate. One thing to note about the passive tank: not all shield tanking ships passive tank terribly well. There are some ships that do it really well, some ships that don't so much. The obvious passive tanking ship that everyone knows about is the Drake. A well passive tank Drake can be a bit of a beast. You've got you can have what's effectively a battleship class tank on a battlecruiser. So you're looking at 100,000 DHP builds for Drake that's fit for tank, which will do quite fairly pathetic DPS, but yeah, it's a very, very tough little ship. And yep, with a passive tank, you can build you can get builds which have got very high effective hit points, especially for the class of ships, so especially Drakes. The disadvantages of a passive tank are you've got fewer absolute hit points than you would have with the buffer tank. So, yep, you've got a very high recharge rate, so you can get your... you can take quite a bit of damage, but if you start taking more DPS than you can recharge, you're actually going to go down quite quickly. So you can break a passive tank ship with just pure DPS, and they will die. Once you've got the required amount of DPS coming in, they will actually die fairly quickly. So, but very useful builds. Especially useful for if you're missioning wormholes. Well, they're even they can even be pretty useful in PvP as well. Very versatile tank type if you're flying a ship that passive tanks well. The final type of shield tank is your active shield tank. Now, your active shield tank, it's very similar in theory to the active armor tank. You're using shield boosters to actively repair your shields. You're using the best specific hardeners that you can get hold of. It's basically similar to the active armor tank. It's mainly used for missioning. It can be very useful. The advantages of an active shield tank: it doesn't increase the sig radius in the same way that a shield buffer tank does. So it's not making you easier to hit, where a buffer tank will make you slightly easier to hit. And also, unlike a passive tank, where with the modules you'd fit for a passive tank, you slightly hurt your regeneration time for your capacitor, you're only turning on your active tank when you need it. So you're only using capacitor when you're taking damage, rather than using capacitor, rather than slightly hitting your capacitor regeneration rate all the time. Disadvantages: it's cap dependent in the same way that the active armor tank is. So if you run out of capacitor, you've lost your tank, and it can, in the same way that the active armor tank can, be overwhelmed by high DPS. And active shield tanks, active armor tanks, usually don't do terribly well in PvP. Well, not in fleet PvP. They can be very effective in kind of small gang PvP or solo PvP, where you're not getting the same type of overwhelming DPS that you get in large fleets. So that's your shield tanks. And the third type of tank that's commonly used, so, because I'm not talking at all about hull tanks here, is the speed tank. Or it's also known as a nano tank. It's also known as a signature tank. You're basically speed tanks, you're fitting propulsion modules like afterburners or micro-warp drives. You're fitting nanofiber internal structures. You're fitting overdrive injector systems. You're basically trying to make your ship as fast and maneuverable as possible. Theory behind a speed tank is that you are faster than the tracking of whoever's trying to hit you. So you're trying to be harder to hit, you're trying to be fast. The disadvantage, obviously, with a speed tank is that as soon as someone starts hitting you, you're very fragile. You kind of die fast. Just linking in some modules that you'd be using for this type of tank. So overdrive injectors, nanofibers, and micro-warp drives. The theory behind the speed tank or signature tank is you're fast. You never approach whoever you're trying to fight directly. You're always trying to approach at an angle and spiral in, so you're keeping your tracking your angular velocity high, so they can't track you with their weapons. Because and as long as you can do that, if they can't track you, they can't hit you. So it's kind of pilot skill dependent. So rather than being your character skill, it requires player skill to be able to do things like manually fly your ships so that you can approach and getting into your engagement range without them being able to get hits on you. Again, manually fly your ships if you need to disengage so they can't track you and hit you. And it also requires specific ships. You're usually going to be speed tanking ships like frigates, interceptors, certain cruisers such as the Stabber, the Vagabond, which is the Tech 2 version of the Stabber, which is a heavy assault ship. Hurricanes, the Minotaur battle cruisers, actually speed tank pretty well, and they can be a real pain if you run up against a speed tanked Hurricane. However, if you can shut down their propulsion module, get webs on them, speed tank ships die very, very fast because they don't have very many hit points in either their shields or their armor. The entire way they're flown is to try and avoid being hit at all. So they're trading fragility for maneuverability. It can be kind of an advanced type of tank to be using. So that's briefly covered all of the basic tank types. Again, for shield tanks, there are shield tanking 101s that will go into shield tanks in a lot more detail. Speed tanks, I'm not sure whether we've got a specific class on that. However, any intro class on interceptors or ships like that will cover the type of manual flying skills that you need for working a speed tank well. And I believe that there is a very good recording on Interceptors 101 done by Gleb, who's a former Unista who has since joined Agony Unleashed. Okay, so next thing we're talking about, everyone's favourite thing, guns. Now, with your guns, you've got two general rules of thumb. When you're fitting guns for PvP, you will usually be wanting to fit the shorter range, higher damage variant of the weapon systems. So you're talking blasters for Galente, you're talking assault missiles, heavy assault missiles for Kaldari, pulse lasers for Ammar, and autocannons for Minotaur. So the shorter range, higher damage motions of the weapon systems. And as a general rule of thumb, for PvE fits, you are looking for the longer range versions of the weapon system. So railguns, heavy missiles, standard missiles, beam lasers, artillery. The general rule of thumb, like every general rule of thumb, there's exceptions. For example, the Roke, which is a Kaldari battleship, is frequently fit as a sniper, so railgun fit and using things like sensor boosters and tracking computers, because with the various bonuses that the Roke gets, you can hit lock and do damage at up to 250 kilometers, which is the hard limit to locking range. It is impossible to lock a target that's at 251 kilometers in any ship, even if, it, in theory, you the bonuses say you should be able to. It's the game just won't let you. But the Roke will lock and hit targets at 250 kilometers in a sniper build, and you'll see those occasionally in PvP. There are other ships that tend to get fit for snipers. Various of the Tech II cruiser types will turn up as sniper fits. And then, yeah, with sniper fits, you'll be using the longer range version of the weapons, which tend to have crummy tracking and less good DPS, just because they've got the range to be able to hit, and if you're working at long range, then tracking isn't really an issue so much. Now, four gun weapon systems, you've usually got two or three different sizes or calibers of weapon in that in each size class. So, for example, with blasters, you've got three different sizes of blaster. You've got the Electron Blaster, which for any of the gun classes, so medium, small, or large, the Electron Blaster is the smallest caliber version. It's the easiest to fit. It's got the highest tracking, but it's also got the lowest damage and the lowest range. You've then moving up a caliber, you've got the Ion Blaster. The Ion Blaster is a little bit more difficult to fit. It's not got quite as good tracking, but it's got a longer range and it does more DPS. And finally, for blasters, you've got the Neutron Blaster. And the Neutron Blaster, it's the largest caliber blaster. It's got the longest range, it does the most damage. It's got the worst tracking and it's got pretty hefty fitting requirements, so it's very tough to fit. And most weapon systems have got a similar thing. So you've got the choice of 200 mm autocannons or 150 mm autocannons, and I can't remember the smallest size of autocannon. I think it's 125 mm. Although, yep, it's 120. So those are your three calibers of autocannons. So in the same way, you've got the 75 mm, the 125 mm, and the 150 mm railguns, and which are the small railgun sizes, I believe. And when you're fitting guns, usually how I will tend to fit weapon systems is I will fit the tank to my to how well tanked I want to fit the ship, and then fit the guns. And I will usually try and fit the mid-caliber weapons of the weapon system, so ion blasters, 125 mil rail guns, 150 mil autocannons. And if I've got power grid and CPU left over, I will try and shift up a caliber. So I'll go up to see if I can ram neutrons or 150 mil rails or 200 mil autocannons onto a ship. If I can't, then I'll stick with medium size because that tends to be a good compromise of tracking and damage and range. And if I can't fit the medium size, I might need to go down a caliber, so I might need to fit the smaller size. So, and obviously, if you're not mixing guns, you drop all of your guns down a caliber, or try and get all of your guns up a caliber, so you don't not got mixed calibers. So that's the kind of thing you're thinking about for fitting guns. Missile launchers, it's slightly different because missile launchers, you've just got basically the Meta Zero version, the Tech 2 version, and the named versions, and you fit whichever one of those types that you can fit. And sorry about that. But yeah, so that's your basic sort of like gun sizes, things you want to think about when you try to ram on as much as many weapons as you can. And the other things that are useful for weapon systems are a set of modules called the Gank modules, generally. These are the magnetic field stabilizer, the gyro stabilizer, the ballistic control system, and the heat sink. And these are modules, they all fit in low slots. They tend to have reasonable CPU requirements, usually about 25 to 30 CPU per module, and pretty low, and they only usually require one power grid, so they're heftier requirements on the CPU than the power grid. And what they do is they increase your effective DPS. They will either increase your effective DPS by increasing your rate of fire or by just increasing the raw damage that the weapon systems they affect use. Each of these Gank modules affects a specific type of weapon system. So the magnetic field stabilizers affect the hybrid weapon systems. So if you're using rail guns or blasters, the Gank modules you're wanting to fit are the magnetic field stabilizers. The gyro stabilizers only affect the projectile weapon systems. So if you're using autocannons, if you're using artillery, you're looking at using gyro stabilizers. Heat sinks affect the laser weapon systems. So pulse lasers, beam lasers, your Gank module you want to be using is your heat sink. And finally, the ballistic control system affects the missile weapon systems. And so if you're Kaldari, then you're looking at ballistic control systems. And each of these, you whack one in your in a free load slot, and it increases the DPS that your ship does. They are affected by stacking penalties, so you don't usually want to fit more than three. Basically, three is the general maximum, although for some fits, if you've got lots of low slots left over and you're using missile launchers, there probably isn't an awful lot you can fit, else you can fit in a low slot that would be useful. And in that case, yeah, you might want to fit four Gank modules. In addition, there's the tracking enhancer, which increases the tracking of the turret weapon systems and increases the optimal range of turreted weapon systems. And these won't affect missile-based ships, so this isn't a module you'd be wanting to fit on a Drake, for example. But if you're using hybrid turrets, if you're using lasers, if you're using projectile turrets, then tracking enhancers will increase your effective DPS because they increase the optimal range of the weapon system, and they also increase the tracking speed, which means you can get more of your on-paper DPS applied to whoever you're shooting at. There's also a mid-slot module called the tracking computer, which does pretty much the same thing as the tracking enhancer. However, the tracking computer is one of the scriptable modules. So if you've got tracking computer, there are two scripts that you can buy. And I'm just checking out my and I'll link. Yep, so if you're using a tracking computer, you can fit, and these are used very much like ammunition, except for they're instantly swapped over and you never run out, so you only need one of each for a ship. If you script a tracking computer, you, instead of getting a single bonus to, instead of getting a bonus to the optimal range and a bonus to the tracking speed, you will get one or the other, but at double the effectiveness. So tracking computers, if you've got a spare mid slot, can be very, very useful, just because they will allow you to significantly boost whichever stat is more important to you in a particular engagement. So if you've got people away off and you want to be able to get more damage on them, you might want to load the optimal range script, and then once the target gets in closer, you probably want to swap from the optimal range to the tracking script so you can track them better and get more DPS on them. So these are your modules that basically they affect your effective DPS of your ship, so they make your ship do more damage to other targets. Now, the next lot of modules I'm going to talk about are the propulsion modules. This is fairly straightforward. You've got two basic propulsion modules. You've got the afterburner and you've got the micro warp drive. Now, the afterburner is okay. It's gives you a reasonable speed boost. It doesn't use up a huge amount of capacitor. It doesn't actually reduce the size of the capacitor when you fit one. But yep, it doesn't make you go as fast. The standard MetaZero afterburner boosts your speed by just having some trouble getting the show info up. Yep, the standard MetaZero afterburner boosts your speed by 112.5%, so you go quite a bit faster. However, the standard MetaZero micro warp drive, and indeed all micro warp drives, no matter how good they are, boost your velocity by 500%. So, whack on a micro warp drive, you're going five times faster than you were to start with. Now, the micro warp drive does have significant disadvantages in some ways. For that massive speed boost, it penalizes your capacitor size. So as soon as you fit a micro warp drive onto your ship, your capacitor size is reduced. It also drains more power when it's running than an afterburner. And when you turn a mitral warp drive on, it actually increases the signature radius of your ship. So you're getting slightly easier to hit. Another factor that will determine whether you're going to fit an afterburner or a mitral warp drive. Afterburners work in dead space pockets. Currently, mitral warp drives don't work in dead space pockets. The majority of missions in the game, so the majority of PvE content in known space, is takes place in dead space pockets. So a mitral warp drive on a ship that's intended for PvE won't be terribly useful most of the time because you won't be able to run it. So usually when you're fitting a ship for missioning, you will be using an afterburner as a propulsion mod rather than mitral warp drive. This may change in the future. I believe there's been some discussion about CCP going to be turning on, going to be making the mitral warp drive work in dead space pockets. I don't know when or if this is definitely coming in, but it's something to be aware of, and it'll probably be a big fuss will be made of it when that actually comes about. There's one slightly advanced thing that you may hear people talking about. It's a type of fit called dual propulsion or dual prop. It's pretty much a PvP fit exclusively. And what it is it's a fit where you've got a mitral warp drive and an afterburner fit on the same ship. So you're giving up one of you're using two propulsion modules on the same ship. What it does is it's the theory behind it is it's to allow fast ships to be able to pick and choose engagements. So ships that you will reasonably frequently see fitted with dual propulsion are things like Dremiors, which are a pirate faction frigate that are very popular with people who like to do frigate PvP because they're awesome, and Tyrannuses, which is a Galente interceptor. And the theory is that these are very fast ships, so they can, if they're fit with dual propulsion, they've got the raw speed boost from mitral warp drive, which allows them to go very, very fast indeed. But if they get into range of a ship they want to attack that has got a warp scrambler, and one of the effects of a warp scrambler is it shuts down mitral warp drives, they can then turn off the afterburner, still be far too fast for the target ship to track, and also be fast enough even on afterburner to disengage from a fight, even while warp scrambled. So it's usually used for flexibility to be able to pick and choose fights and to be able to get out of fights if things have taken a turn for the worse. It's quite an advanced fitting, but it's useful for you to be aware of its existence because it's something you might have to think about if you meet a Dremio or you meet a Tyrannus somewhere and he wants to attack you. Okay, so that's the propulsion modules covered. I'm just going to talk about utility modules. And these are the modules that they're useful. They do useful things, but they don't kind of fit in the categories I've talked about already. So the first utility mod I'll be talking about is the sensor booster. Sensor boosters are often referred to in chat as SEBOs because there are many, many things that use the initials SB. What sensor boosters do is they improve the locking time and locking range of the ship that's got the sensor booster fitted. So if you've got a sensor booster fitted, you can lock targets further out, and you can lock them faster than you could if you didn't have a sensor booster fitted. And sensor boosters are like tracking computers, scriptable modules. If you've got a sensor booster fitted, you can load that sensor booster with various scripts. You've got the targeting range script, and you've got the scan resolution script. And I'll just link those into chat. And what these do is, what these scripts do is, rather than the sensor booster that's fit to your ship increasing the looking range and the scan resolution of your ship, it removes the bonus completely from one of those. So if you fit the targeting range script, you will find that you get double the bonus for targeting range, but your scan resolution isn't increased at all. So you're looking as fast as you did before you fit the sensor booster, but you've got a decent boost for your targeting range. And in the same way, if you use the scan resolution script, you are suddenly locking an awful lot faster, but you with the same targeting range that you had before you fit the sensor booster. So those scripts can be very useful, especially for tacklers. And you only need one of each script in the hold of your ship. They load instantly, and they're never used up. So they're kind of useful if you're using sensor boosters. It's always worth having the scripts in your hold, even if you don't necessarily want them loaded into the sensor booster all the time. The next set of utility modules to talk about are the capacitor modules. There are three basic sets of capacitor modules. You've got cap boosters, you've got cap recharges, and you've got cap batteries. And these modules all affect your capacitor in some way. The capacitor battery is a module that actually increases the raw size of the capacitor. So if you fit a capacitor battery, it increases the capacitor size. That module is less commonly used than the other two modules because, yep, while increasing your capacitor size can be useful, the effects of the other modules are usually mean that they work better and they're more generally useful. The cap recharger increases the recharge rate of your capacitor. So for each capacitor recharger, your capacitor fills up again after it's been used rather faster. And the capacitor boosters add energy into the capacitor in chunks. That's kind of the best way to describe it. Cap recharges are very useful for PVE. There's a limited number of modules that are really, really useful for mid-slots for PVE after you fit your afterburner, especially if you're an armor tank ship. Webs can be useful, target painters and things can be useful, but cap recharges can be very, very useful in your mid-slots. They're a passive module. They increase your capacitor recharge rate, and they can make fit cap stable, which is really, really kind of nice. If you've got a cap stable fit for a missioning ship, it means you can run your active tank permanently. You don't need to sort of turn it off and turn it on to basically keep yourself in cap while you're in a mission. The disadvantage of cap recharges is that while they increase the regen rate, you're still as vulnerable to capacitor warfare. So people using engine neutralizers and Nosferatus on you as you are if you haven't got cap recharges fit. So they're very useful in PvE, so missioning and wormholes and things like that, less useful for PvP. And of course, if you're running a shield tanking ship, you possibly not going to have very much room to try and fit cap recharges because you're using your mid slots for your shield tank. Cap boosters, on the other hand, are very, very commonly used in PvP. They're active modules, and they take ammunition, and the ammunition is called cap booster charges. And cap booster charges all have a size. So you've got cap booster 200s, cap booster 800s. That size relates to the amount of capacitor units that they dump into your capacitor. And every time a cap booster cycles, it dumps that amount of cap into your capacitor. So it's adding cap in chunks, which is really, really useful if you're being neutered by another ship, because if you can time your module cycle on the cap booster, it means that despite the enemy's energy neutralizers keeping your cap empty, you've got enough cap to maintain your tackle, to keep your guns firing, etc. And, yep, the cap boosters come in a variety of sizes. The largest size is the cap booster 800. Cap booster 800s are huge, and cap charges can take up lots of hold space, as I'm sure any of you that have done very many missions will have found out, just by picking up cap boosters from the mission loop from the wrecks, and suddenly finding you've got very little hold space left. So, yeah, but they're not generally used in missioning because they take because the cap booster charges take up so much hold space, and there are things that you're more usefully wanting to use the hold space for when you're missioning. For example, more ammunition, unless you happen to be MR. So those are your capacitor mods. And the final set of utility modules that there's needed to talk about are your fitting helper modules. These are a few modules that help you with your with fitting your ships. So these are things like the coprocessor, which is a module that increases the amount of CPU you've got, and the micro-auxiliary power core, which increases the amount of power grid you've got, and the reactor control unit, which also increases the size of the power grid you've got. All these can be very useful modules if you've got a very, very tight fit that you just don't have quite enough CPU or power grid to fit. Basically, when you're using things like micro-auxiliary power cores and coprocessors, what you're doing is you're swapping your one of your low slots for the ability to fit a few more modules elsewhere. So you're swapping a low slot to increase the amount of power grid and to increase the amount of CPU you've got available. And I'm trying to look for a micro auxiliary power core to link in. Sure, yeah, should have one. But anyway, the thing with these fitting modules is that if you can, try and avoid fitting them. Low slots and mid slots, and the fitting mods are almost exclusively low slot modules, are kind of a precious resource. You've got an awful lot of very useful modules that you can fit in your low slots, and you can fit in your mid slots. And while sometimes you can't avoid fitting, using a fitting mod to get a fit that you want, ideally you'd avoid using them at all. They make up for training in your fitting skills to a certain extent. But yeah, I'd prefer people to train up their fitting skills high enough to get a fit in, rather than having to rely on using fitting modules all the time. But they're there, they're available, they can be very useful, and sometimes when you've got maximized, even when you've got maximized fitting skills, there are fits that actually require coprocessors and micro auxiliary power cores to be able to fit, just because you do, even with maximized fitting skills, you just don't have the power grid and CPU available to you. Okay, so that's kind of, we've run through the modules that a lot sort of like general modules you're thinking of fitting. So I'm going to start talking about fitting for roles. And this is something that comes into PvP a lot, where you've got various roles that ships will be generally performing, but also there is a kind of equivalent thing that you're going to be thinking about when you're fitting for PvE, so for missions. So basically, in PvP, most ships will have a specific role. Roles that are commonly used in university PvP fleets are tackle, EWAR, and DD or damage dealing. An example tackle ship would be the Merlin Caldari frigate. An example EWAR ship would be the Blackbird. And an example damage dealing ship would be something like a Brutix or a Megathron. Basically, when you're fitting for a PvP role, you have a set of modules that are core to that role. So for a tackle frigate, you've got three modules that are, well, two modules that are absolutely essential, and some modules which are a little bit more optional. Essential for a tackle frigate is a propulsion module, so an afterburner or a micro warp drive, preferably a micro warp drive, because you've got to get to the target to be able to put a tackle on them, and a warp disruptor or warp scrambler. A tackle ship that doesn't have a warp disruptor and a warp disruptor or a warp scrambler and doesn't have a propulsion mod is no good to anyone. If you're fitting a tackle ship and you don't have especially the tackle module fitted and the propulsion mod fitted, then that's not really a tackle fit, and it's not fulfilling the role. If you've got a mid-slot left over, and most tackle frigates will, a stasis Webifar is very, very nice to have it alongside. And if you're in, for example, a Merlin, which has got four mid-slots, a sensor booster is also very, very nice to have, because it means you can lock faster and it makes it easier to catch certain very fast ships like interceptors and other frigates and things. So those are your core modules. After you've got your propulsion module, your tackle module fitted on, and any of your nice optional modules like sensor boosters and webs, which make you a lot more effective, then you think about fitting everything else. So guns, tank, everything else is secondary to the modules that you need to perform your roles. On tackle frigates that use hybrid, where the pilots would be using hybrid weapon systems, yes, fit them. don't use them though. Again, with laser frigates that are for tackle rolls, fit them. You probably don't want to use them because you want to be saving your capacitor for using for your tackle modules, your primary modules. But it's always good to have guns on a PvP ship because they, you never know when you might need to shoot back at something. But guns for a tackle frigate are very much secondary. If you are fitting out an e-warship, so a Blackbird, your primary modules are your ECM modules. So your set of racially electronic warfare modules, and you're fitting those first, and then everything else is secondary. Blackbirds, for example, quite often don't even have any real tank fitted. They rely on their jamming abilities and keeping at range from the fight to keep alive. So you fit your primary role modules first, and then you fit everything else around it. If you're a damage dealer, obviously your primary modules are your tank and your guns, and you've got that little balancing act. Do I want to go more DPS but slightly more fragile, or do I want to go more tanky, so more robust but not doing as good DPS? It's a bit of a balancing act. Some people prefer tankier ships that will stay alive to do to keep their damage output going for longer. Some people prefer ships that tend to be slightly more glass cannon-like, so they do a lot of DPS, but they haven't got a great deal of tank. That's partly determined by the damage-dealing ship you're flying, partly determined by how you like to fly it. With tank and gank for damage dealing, it is very much a balancing act, because yeah, you might be able to do brilliant DPS, but if you're so fragile that you get blown up within 30 seconds of an engagement, then that's possibly less useful than if you do a little bit less DPS, but you can stay alive for a minute, 2 minutes. So a bit of a balancing act there. But that's when you're PvP, it's you fit your primary modules first. Everything else is secondary, and you fit the secondary modules around your role. So you go for your secondary, primary modules, everything else. If you can fit it, then that's brilliant. But you don't want to compromise your ability to perform the role that you're trying to perform in the fleet, because you want to have slightly bigger guns on, or because you want to be a little bit tougher. If you're fitting PvP, pretty much always the first module I fit on any ship I'm going to be taking out for PvP is a damage control. Usually a damage control 2, because they're brilliant. Even on a tackle frigate, damage control will give you significantly more survivability than being pure speed tanked. So personally, I'd prefer the university standard tackle frigate fits, especially to have damage controls rather than all speed mods and velos, just because they add significant amounts of survivability to be able to do your job. And yeah, damage controls are brilliant, brilliant, brilliant modules, and yeah, fit them if you can on your PvP ships. The equivalent thing to fitting for roles for missioning is you are fitting to deal with the specific types of NPC rats that you will be facing in the mission. So when you accept a mission from your agent, the mission description will have information that tells you what faction it is, and you then can go to evesurvival.org and you can then go to various sites that tell you what damage types those NPC rats are weak to and which damage types they do, such as the Eve quick reference page, which has got an awful lot of useful information. And yep, Eve survival will give you more specifics and detailed information on the type of damage types the NPC rats do, the type of damage types they're weak to. And so when you're fitting a missioning ship to do a particular mission, you will pretty much always fit the specific hardeners that those mission rats do. So if they're angels and they tend to do mostly explosive with kinetic, then you're going to be fitting explosive and kinetic hardness to your ship, so you're tanking that type of damage type more effectively. If you're facing Sancha, who do EM and thermal damage, then you're going to be fitting EM and thermal hardness to tank that type of damage more efficiently. And at the same time, if you're a Minmatar pilot or a Kaldari pilot, so you're using weapon systems that have got swappable damage types, you're going to be loading the ammunition that does the damage that those types of NPCs are weak to. So if you're facing angels, you'll be using the missiles or projectile ammunition that does explosive damage, because angels have got a huge hole in the explosive resist. At the same time, similarly, if you're fighting Sancha, you're going to be fitting EMP ammunition, because the EMP resist for Sancha is their weakest resist, so you will kill them faster if you're using EMP ammunition. So that's how you cope. That's what you're thinking about for your fittings for missioning. So, moving on, talking a little bit about rigs. I mentioned rigs briefly at the start. What rigs are they're kind of, they're like implants for your ship. They provide bonuses, although most rigs also have penalties. And once you fit a rig to your ship, you can't unfit it without destroying it. Also, repackaging a ship will destroy any fitted rigs. So if you're using rigs, that's something to think about. Useful rigs for missioning ships will be things like capacitor control circuits, which increase the recharge rate of your capacitor in the same way that a cap recharger will. There are also a variety of speed rigs and damage and weapon system boosting rigs and armor rigs like the Trimark armor pump. And these are all very useful rigs to think about fitting, especially if you're starting to think about using larger ships such as battle cruisers and battleships. Even if you don't have the skill to be able to fit a rig to your own ship, if you can find someone you trust who can fit the rigs for you, they can rig a ship for you, and you can then get it back by trading it in station or by using a contract, and you will be able to use that ship and get the bonuses from the rigs, although the full penalty that is applied if the rig has a penalty will also affect you. So for armor rigs, the penalty is that they reduce the speed of your ship. For the weapon system rigs, they reduce the amount of power grid you've got available. Power grid rigs, so the rigs that increase your capacitor recharge rate and capacitor size and energy grid, don't have any drawbacks at all, so they can be very, very useful to have fitted. Rigs can be expensive though. A full set of medium Trimarks will run you, will cost you about 10 million ISK. And that would be something you probably only want to be spending if you're flying battle cruisers. But yeah, so rigs, kind of nice. You need to make sure that you want that rig fit to that ship, because as soon as you put it on, you can't take it off again. So the money that you've spent on that rig is gone if you decide you don't want to use that rig anymore. So to save yourself money fitting ships, there are a number of third-party programs. The one I personally prefer is called EFT, and you can obtain EFT from the link that I'm just about to link into chat. The second link will work properly. The first one I've got something on the end of. Only obtain EFT from that link. There are that's a forum thread on the EVE Online forums, which has got the links to the binaries for the EVE fitting tool. And what EVE and EVE, the EVE fitting tool is brilliant. It saves you money. It allows you to get a good idea of what a fit's capable of before you actually start spending any money on the parts. So you can import your characters so you can see whether you can actually use a fit in, and it's just very, very useful. It's not the be all and end all. There are people who will just spend the hours and hours and hours and hours playing around and fit with fits in EFT. And it's a good approximate information of how well a ship might work in game, but once you've got your EFT fit that you're happy with and you can use it, your current skills, and it will all fit on, and you've bought your modules and fitted them all to the ship, it's always a good idea to try out that fit in a fairly low risk environment. So if it's PvP fit, ask some guys in Corp to do some sparring, say at Planet 8, which a lot of guys in Corp will do. They'll sort of like play around shooting each other, getting down to structure or something at Planet 8, so you can see how your fit works for PvP. If you fit out a missioning fit, then ideally you'll want to be using it for the first time in for quite an easy mission, so one that doesn't have huge amounts of DPS. So, you know, you can. You're fairly certain it, you can get out of it if something goes horribly wrong. So, after you've done a fit in EFT, go try it out somewhere where it's fairly safe and make sure that it works as well in game as it would appear to in the in EFT. Other apps which will do the similar thing are EVEHQ is the main additional third-party application that's got a fitting system. EVEHQ's it's a pretty good program. It's also got a training planner a la EVEMOB and a bunch of other actual functionality that EFT and EVEMOB don't have, so it can be a very useful tool. Personally, I prefer the EFT and EVE one way, but any of these EVEHQ, EFT, they both work pretty much as well as each other. It's just down to which one you prefer, whether you prefer what an application that's got all those features in one application. So EFT, brilliant. EVEHQ, again, really useful. Use one. Use it for figuring out your fits. Use it to look at other people's fits that get posted up. See how they work. See whether they'd work for you. So you could nick fits and just see what play around with it. See how different modules affect ships in different ways. So there's always unconventional things you can try. Oversized shield extenders, for example. A lot of ships fits you'll see will you'll get frigate size fits that will be using medium shield extenders, which is technically a cruiser size module, or cruisers that are using battle cruisers that are using large shield extenders. These fits, they can, especially the frigate fits that are using medium shield extenders, can often require using fitting modules to give you the required grid to be able to use it. These can be useful. These can be a very nasty surprise. I've seen, and unfortunately I don't have saved, a Merlin fit that will do horrible things to an unsuspecting Dremel, which is kind of nice because that's a very cheap fit that will kill a 70 million Isk Hull faction frigate. And you would get some brilliant tears if you killed someone's Dremel in a Merlin. It would just be amusing. So there's always ways you can play around. Always, if you're playing around doing something a little bit weird, a little bit unconventional, don't do it just because it's a little bit weird. Try and have a reason. But unconventional fits can be brilliant for just throwing a curveball. For people expecting one thing and suddenly you've got something else. On the other hand, unconventional fits, yeah, check them before you really play with them, because a lot of unconventional fits, they'll be unconventional for a reason, and it'll probably be that they don't work terribly well generally, or they're just very, very specialised. So don't be afraid to try something a bit weird, a bit different, but have good reasons, think it through first, and possibly talk it over with some of the people who are very good at fitting that are that you can chat to as a member of the uni. For example, Flay Geobugsen is very good on fitting, although he's never seen a fit that he's happy with. He can be a bit grumpy, but don't let that put you off. He's full of good advice. Also, people like Azure Skull and Glep, who are out of uni, they're actually members of Agony Unleashed, which is a dedicated PvP nullsec corporation. But they give very good fitting advice. Asianami Day, Rain Kissindi. There's a lot of people you can ask for fitting advice, and most people won't. And feel free, people happily give up their time telling you where a fit is possibly weak, possibly where you can improve it, why you'd want to use different modules to the ones you've picked potentially. Occasionally, some people might be a bit grumpy and tell you fairly bluntly, but don't take that to heart. They'd probably just have a bad day. Feel free to ask advice. Command.iln is a good resource for people currently in the uni who want to ask advice on PvP fittings, because there's a lot of PvP oriented players who hang around in there. There's all the fitting forums on the university forums, where you can see discussions about various types of fits. Scrap Heap Challenge is another website that's got a lot of good fits on it. They tend to be quite high skill point fits with expensive modules, but to a certain extent you can cut down. You can use cheaper modules, and you can use you can sort of like modify those fits to the skills that you've got. But there's usually a decent amount of discussion on the Scrap Heap Challenge threads, so you get an idea of why people have picked what they've picked. BattleClinic.com's fits I would generally avoid, personally. There are so many rubbish fits on Battle Clinic, and rubbish fits that have got that people have given high ratings to, just because they find it funny and they'd love to find someone with a shit fit that way. So Battle Clinic, it's possible to find good fits, but you need to know what a good fit looks like and how to spot a bad fit on Battle Clinic, which partly the idea of this class is to help you with it, because if you can fit, know the theory behind fitting stuff, as well as making up your own fits, it makes it a lot easier to assess other people's fits. So you see whether people have got some horrible fit that up on Battle Clinic and stuff, or whether it's actually sort of like kind of interesting. So those are sort of resources you've got available for in the uni and out of the uni for looking at fits, discussing fits, things like that. And the last thing I'd like to talk about before I wrap up this class is, I like to call them the Awkward Squad. They're a bunch of ships that, they're very versatile. You've got things like the Brutix and the Myrmidon and the Hurricane, which are battle cruisers, which fit good tanks of both types. The Myrmidon, the Brutix, the Hurricane especially, they work just as well shield tanked as they do armor tanked. For some of them, there are actually some advantages to shield tanking rather than armor tanking. And if you're flying one of those ships, which tank you decide to fit will largely depend on, initially, your skills. If you've got lots of skill points in armor tanking and fewer in shield tanking, then you're probably going to want to fit those ships with an armor tank, because that's where your skills are. If vice versa, you've got a lot of shield tanking skills, not many armor tanking skills, then you're probably going to want to be fitting an armor tank, fitting a shield tank. However, after you've got the ability to T2 tank, a T2 shield tank and T2 armor tank ship, then it's down to personal preference and what specifically you're trying to do with the ship. A shield tanked Brutix or Myrmidon or Hurricane is going to be a lot faster than an armor tanked one, especially for PvP fit. If you're shield tanking one of those ships, it means you're freeing up a lot of low slot modules that you'd be using for an armor tank to fit gank modules, so you can do more DPS. On the other hand, an armor tanked version of those ships will theoretically be a bit tougher than the shield tank, so it'll last longer. It's kind of swings and roundabouts. It depends how you like to fly your ships, etc. The Myrmidon is doubly awkward, and there are a few other ships in the game like it that don't have any bonuses on weapon systems. And if you've not got bonuses on weapon systems, it means you're as well fitting pretty much any other turreted weapon system. So Myrmidon's a Galente ship, so usually you'd be thinking about fitting hybrid weapons to it. So you'd be thinking about rail guns and blasters. However, doesn't have a range bonus or damage bonus or rate of fire bonus for hybrid weapons. So if you fit projectile weapons, they'll be just as effective as hybrid weapons. But projectile weapons have got a switchable damage type and don't use any cap. So those are two immediate huge advantages for projectile weapons. And generally, if you've got a ship that's unbonused on weapon systems, and you've got the skills to use projectile weapon systems, then use projectile weapon systems. Because lasers use an awful lot of capacitor every time they fire, and they only ever do EM and thermal damage. Hybrids, they don't use as much capacitor when they fire as lasers, but they still use capacitor when they fire, and they only do kinetic and thermal damage. So projectile weapons, they don't use any capacitor at all when they fire, and depending on the ammo you use, you can do any damage type, and usually the projectile ammo is single damage type ammo. So you are just doing EM damage, you are just doing explosive damage, or you're just doing thermal, or just doing kinetic. So you can it allows you to really take advantage of those resist holes that some ships will have. So that's 2.5 hours of me talking about fitting, and hopefully that's been useful for you guys. If anyone's got any other questions, feel free to chat, type them in chat while I have a drink and go bleh. And yep, hopefully everyone has gone away and will have fun trying outfits, and will be able to understand why some fits will get a bit of a pasting in various forums like Scrap Heap Challenge, yeah, nearly forgot to say, another very good resource for looking at fits is to check out killboards. Some of those fits will be kind of horrible, but some of them will actually be really good, because especially PvP fits, no matter how good they are, you'll lose a few of them.